Streaming worldwide at WLVL.com. The Niagara County Legislature approved the 2021 budget on a party line vote Tuesday night. The plan cuts spending and jobs, but increases by 2.95% the property tax levy. The budget vote was supported by 8 members of the Republican caucus and opposed by 4 Democrats. Another COVID-19 death was reported in Niagara County Tuesday. The health department also announced 219 new confirmed cases of the virus yesterday. The total number of active cases in the county is now 1,573. 24 of those are hospitalized. The rest are quarantined at home. In Erie County, 2 members of the legislature are recovering after testing positive for coronavirus. Legislators Edward Rath and Frank Todaro say they're now self-isolating. Both men say they're not exactly sure how they may have contracted the illness. In other COVID news from Erie County, 2 bars there are among 36 statewide that have had their liquor licenses suspended for violations of pandemic-related orders. The Clinton Bar and Grill in West Seneca was cited for violating the 10 p.m. statewide closing time. And the Cowboy on West Chippewa in Buffalo was written up for being overcrowded and not enforcing the mask mandate. There has been a plea deal in the March 1st fatal home invasion on the Tuscarora Reservation. 18-year-old Michael Printup has pleaded guilty to a reduced charge of attempted assault. He and 2 accomplices were accused of invading the home of 55-year-old Galen Fisher on Mount Hope Road. Fisher shot and killed one of the perpetrators, 18-year-old Christian Williams, during the incident. Printup and Matthew DeBuck were arrested. Charges, including attempted murder, remain against DeBuck. Printup faces up to 15 years in prison when he is sentenced in March. On the traffic watch this morning, first responders were on site at a car striking a utility pole. Injuries reported. It happened on Bowmiller Road earlier this morning in the town of Lockport. Deputies and volunteers responded. In regional news, 1 person is dead, 2 more hurt following a serious crash in Ontario County. It happened yesterday near Route 332 and Airport Road in Canandaigua. 2 vehicles were heading south when they slammed into a tractor trailer. A 4th vehicle was also involved. No word on the condition of the injured. 2 items from area police reports this morning. 27-year-old Christopher Holmes of Lockport was recently charged with DWI after a traffic stop on Prospect Street. Deputies kept Holmes in custody pending arraignment. And 27-year-old Joseph Scanlon D'Angelo of Akron Road was written up by LPD for criminal contempt. He's accused of violating an order of protection after an incident on Sunnyside Street. He was also held for arraignment. New York Senators Schumer and Gillibrand have joined the chorus of voices calling for faster Lake Ontario outflows. Concerned lakeshore property owners want more water to be let out of the lake now to reduce the chances of flooding in the spring. IJC engineers contend that faster outflows won't necessarily guarantee those results. Schumer and Gillibrand have expressed concern that the other 4 Great Lakes are showing water levels well above normal for this time of year. Members of the State Assembly and Senate now know when the 2021 legislative session will begin. They'll meet for the first of 60 scheduled days on Wednesday, January 6th. They're expected to be in session until June 10th. And as they did earlier this year, lawmakers are expected to conduct most of their voting virtually. Finally, stargazers are in for a gift this holiday season in what's known as the Christmas star. The two biggest planets in our solar system will be the closest they have been in the night skies in nearly 800 years. Jupiter and Saturn will be closest on December 21st, the winter solstice, which is the longest night of the year in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, according to news reports, the last time the two planets were so close was in 1623, but that was Jupiter and Venus. However, the last time Jupiter and Saturn were so close and observable with a telescope, that was in 1226. WLVL Niagara weather for today. A mix of rain and snow through early afternoon. Today's high, 37. For tonight, mostly cloudy with the low, 35. And Thursday, partly sunny, a little bit warmer. Tomorrow's high, 41. That's a look at the news and weather. I'm Hank Nevins.
Let's take a trip down memory lane with Niagara County's Great History Show. Now, here's your host, Norm Palmer.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the show this morning. In the studio with me, the Executive Director of Niagara County History Center, Melissa Dunlap, and she brought a very special guest with us today. He was on once before, and I'm going to give him a little prop once we introduce him. The curator of our History Center, Terry Abrams. Good morning, folks.
Morning.
Morning.
I would like to remind everyone that our peanut butter and jelly collection will continue through tomorrow. And the closing hours of our office is 2 p.m. today and tomorrow. So that will be through tomorrow to 2 o'clock. Thank you very much. And as I was going to say, Terry was on our show and had an outstanding baseball display at the center. And we were talking about Hall of Famers from years ago and special baseball players. And Terry said, you know, there's a player that I'd like to talk about. And he did. And that player went into Buffalo's Hall of Fame. So nice shot, Terry. Great. Okay, Melissa, you're on.
Okay. Anne-Marie has written a book about the Protestant churches in the city of Lockport. We had done the Catholic churches years ago. And it was sponsored by the Wright's Corners Presbyterian Church. Before they closed, they donated the money for this publication. So she is having a book signing. It's on Wednesday, December 16th at 2 o'clock. And we will require face masks, so there will be social distancing. But if you are interested, there's 20 different churches that she's written a brief history of. There's photographs in the book, and she's really done a nice job. So it's called A History of Protestant Churches of the City of Lockport, New York. And that will be on book signing with Anne-Marie on Wednesday, December 16th at 2. And if you want more information about the book or about what we're doing, you could call the museum at 434-7433. The other thing we're doing is we have been doing a series. Terry, the curator, and Dr. Shannon Risk from Niagara University and Anne-Marie have been working together to do a program on Belville Lockwood in the fight for equal rights in America. And this has been a six programs, series. So we've been doing it virtually, like everything else, and there is still one left, and that's on December 17th. And it's Mary Taylor Brennan, Vice President of Programs for the YWCA, and she's going to talk about Alice Stokes Paul. And if you watched any of the suffragist programs on WNED, they had a big series, and Alice Paul was a big figure in that series. And she was an American suffragist, a feminist, and a women's rights activist. But the interesting thing is that Mary Brennan Taylor got to meet her. And when she was very young, Mary, not Alice Paul, and she started a collection. So she has a really fantastic collection of Ellis Paul, and she had an exhibit of it at the Keenan Center just last year that was really outstanding. So I think it'll be a wonderful talk, and it will be on December 17th. And if you want to have the link to hear that talk, it's 434-7433. Now, when all these programs are done, they're going to be on our YouTube channel. And some have already been entered on there, but they all will eventually be on there. And also, Terry Abrams has done another program on our YouTube channel about a very interesting artifact that we were given by someone locally, which Terry could talk about. And if you are interested, I think you get to the YouTube channel by either entering the History Center or Niagara County Historical Society. So we're going to have to get that a link to our YouTube on our website. So I guess that's probably it for the moment. Also, Terry's going to talk about the collections and things. And if you do have, we really weren't going to talk about Christmas this time because we have so many times, but if there is something about Christmas that you really want to say, call in and say it.
And that number is 433-1433 if you have a question or a comment for Melissa or Terry. Terry Abrams with us today, a curator at the History Center. So that's 433-1433. Okay, Terry.
Okay. Well, Melissa had mentioned that you know, we received donations of all kinds of things from people throughout the year. And in fact, generally, we've been averaging about 100 donations a year over the past few years. And when I say 100 donations, I don't mean 100 individual objects or artifacts. I mean 100 separate donations. Sometimes it'll be one artifact. Sometimes it'll be what I call a box of stuff, and, you know, and people, you know, people are cleaning out their attics, or, you know, a relative has died, their grandparent or their parent has passed away, and they have something that, you know, maybe they don't have anyone to pass it on to, or, you know, it's not something that's important to them, but they think it might have some historical value, so they bring it to us. You know, then, you know, we have to determine, we have a collections committee. There's a whole process involved. You know, we have to sort of document where this came from, you know, who gave it to us, and, you know, what it is, so that we can, you know, we determine whether it does have any historical value to us. You know, we want to focus primarily on things from Niagara County, relating to people who lived here or were born here or who had played some important role in the history of Niagara County. To give you an example, Melissa talked about we did a video that's on our YouTube channel about a particular artifact that was donated to us. And how this came about was we had an art show a couple of years ago. And in the art show, we had a painting that was done by a prisoner of war who was held at Fort Niagara during World War II. And this painting was one of the soldiers there who was stationed there had gotten married. And the portrait was a wedding portrait of his wife. And her name was her name is Dorothy Bickert Nagy. And the painting, the portrait, was on display, somebody saw it, and they knew Dorothy, and so they told her about it, and so Dorothy and her daughter came down, and they looked at the painting. They saw Dorothy had donated the painting several years before, but this time, she said, you know, when she came down, she says, "Well, I still have the wedding dress that she was wearing in the painting," and she offered it to us to donate it to us. Now, normally, we wouldn't accept wedding dresses any longer because we have in the past, and you know, we have a fairly substantial collection of wedding dresses. And so at this point, you know,
I think we have the gremlins again. I'm going to have to get a hold of an engineer here.
Normally, we wouldn't accept a wedding dress because you know, we have so many now, but this was different because we had the painting of her in the wedding dress, and Dorothy is in her 90s, And so she brought the dress down, and you know, she told me, you know, this wonderful story about, you know, because I asked her, it says, well, how did you meet? How did you, you know, your husband, you know, meet and get married? And so she told the story. Her and a friend had gone to the movies at the Palace Theater right there on Main Street in Lockport. You know, this was back, I think I would say 43 or somewhere in there in the 40s, late 40s, 43 or 44. You know, they came out of the theater, they were standing there on the sidewalk, and this car drives up, and the man who became her husband was there, and another man who is a friend of her friend. And so they stopped, and the friend, you know, asked the women there, he said, you know, ask them, do you drink beer? He says, I have a dollar. And he says, if you drink beer, I'll buy you a beer. You know, and, you know, he had this old, you know, fashioned car, you know, with a rumble seat in the back, you know, typical of the 40s. So apparently they drank beer because they hopped in the car and they went down to, you know, an establishment down on Market Street. And went there, and a couple of weeks later, you know, she started dating, you know, her husband, and about, you know, I think about 6 months later, they were married. And she says that they were the first military wedding at the Presbyterian Church in Lockport. So, but that was, you know, I thought that was a great story, you know.
Now, the artifacts that you're talking about from Niagara County, where can they deliver them to if they're not familiar with where the History Center is?
They can drop them off at the 215 Niagara Street, right there in Lockport, just a block or so down from the courthouse.
But with COVID now, they need to call first, 434-7433, and make an appointment. We're really taking visitors by appointment at this point.
Yes, and there's a form that you have to fill out, and so, you know, you can call or email us, I can send you the form, and then you can fill out the form ahead of time, and that way it'll all be set, you know, when you want to drop off your artifact. So.
Yeah. Okay. Tell people a little bit about what a curator actually does, because they know the title, but they don't actually know what the position is.
Well, a curator works with the collection. You have to sort of do research about what some of the artifacts are and, you know, where they came from. You know, and that's a fascinating sort of thing. And you know, I put up exhibits. And I sort of have to keep track of all the information. There's a lot of people think that, you know, when you tell people you're a curator in a museum, they think it's sort of a glamorous thing because you get to work with all these historic artifacts. But a large chunk of the job is sitting in front of a computer doing data entry, because you have to collect all the information about the object. You know, how big is it? How old is it? You know, what does it look like? Where it came from? Who owned it? And you have to put all that into a sort of a computer database so that you have all that information, so that if you do an exhibit or a program or a publication, you know, you have all that information available, because we're, you know, a museum, a historical society. You know, we're chartered under the State Education Department, so we're an educational institution. So all that information, you know, you have to gather all of that together.
Right. Plus, it's the information will be passed on when we're gone, the next generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're responsible for the artifacts that we're keeping, and artifacts are three-dimensional items.
Yes.
Yeah, the paper items are in the archives. Mm-hmm. That's the two distinctions between artifacts and archives. So museums collect both, and historians are supposed to only collect archives. And so that's the distinction between historians and museums.
Mm-hmm. So, Yes, and it's, you know, it's fascinating finding. I mean, I find it fascinating to find, you know, you discover all kinds of things about, you know, all sorts of, you know, different types of artifacts. And I'll tell you, thank God for the internet, because nowadays it's so much easier, you know, to go online and, you know, you can search and you know, find out things that you might not find otherwise, or that, you know, it may take you, you know, hours, days, weeks, years even of research before you might find certain information.
And the internet saves a lot of pairs of sneakers, because before that you had the sneakers and out on the in the field,
mm-hmm.
Examining everything, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, now the artifacts that you are collecting, does it have to be from a famous person? What if somebody has like an old gumball machine from the Ford gumball factory or something like that? Would that be considered an artifact that you might collect?
Yes, it doesn't have to be from a famous person. You know, but we want something that does have some relation to Niagara County. I'll give you an example of something that another thing that we received recently. You know, talking about archives, this is something that's part of our archives. Somebody just mailed this to us. They had it. I don't know how or why they even saved it, but it was an envelope that would be used for holding photographs or negatives. You know, back in the old days when photographs came from film, and you know you drop them off to some place and have them developed, and so this was an envelope, and it said Condo Art Studio on it, and so it had to sort of do a little search and it had the address. It was Niagara Falls, and it turns out it belonged to this photographer named Theodore Kondo, who was born in Japan, and he came to the U.S. He emigrated to the United States, and he ended up getting married and moving to Niagara Falls. And he was a photographer, and he had a photography studio in Niagara Falls from about 1920 till about 1960. And so... you know, and it was very interesting because there was he had a little logo on there, which had, you know, sort of a Japanese style design on it. And, you know, so I had to sort of do some research, I found an obituary, and Anne Marie actually did more research, and she wrote an article about it, which appeared in the Lockport
Union Sun and Journal.
Union Sun and Journal, and you know, and I did a little more searching, and I actually was able to find a photograph taken by Theodore Kondo. It's a photograph of a woman and her daughter. They're dressed in white. It's from about the 1920s. Based on their the way they're dressed. And so we were able to acquire a photograph. So now we have two artifacts related to Theodore Kondo. You know, and he was apparently a very well-known photographer in Niagara Falls. You know, and so he's very active in the community. So, you know, I mean, you know, he's not a famous politician or baseball player or, you know, a big celebrity, but he was somebody who was prominent in the community and who, you know, people knew, and, you know, a successful businessman and an artist. And so there's, you know, and, you know, that was, you know, and I, it was somebody that I didn't know about or, you know, had never heard of before. And just because somebody, you know, happened to send us an envelope, essentially, you know, this whole, you know, whole new world, this whole, you know, new information about, you know, this person, you know, opens up to us. Yeah. And
we often find things when we're moving things around that we've forgotten about or mm-hmm. we didn't know were there because they were inside something else. And it's kind of like a treasure hunt, except that we already have the treasure.
Yes.
We just have to find out what the treasure is. Mm-hmm. So
we'll take our first break of the day, and we'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to Niagara County's Great History Show on 1340 AM, 105.3 FM.
Sub Delicious Drive-In on Route 31 is serving free coffee all winter long. Now carrying homemade pies, apple, pumpkin, pecan, and cakes. And the homemade chili is a cold weather favorite. Salem hot dogs and steak burgers are still only 99 cents. Serving Perry's ice cream and old-fashioned shakes. Sub Delicious Drive-In now has a drive-through window. Open every day 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Visit sub-delicious.com or call 438-7183.
Hometown 1340 AM and 105.3 FM is Niagara County's information station. Now, proud to partner with Fox News. Get the latest updates every hour, on the hour, from America's top news network, Fox News Radio. Always up-to-date information every hour, every day. The exclusive home for Fox News Radio in Western New York is Hometown 1340 AM and 105.3 FM. WLVL Lockport, streaming live worldwide at WLVL.com and on your smart devices and speakers.
Want to be part of the hometown team? WLVL has a unique opening for just the right all-around player. We have a temporary front desk position available. To be considered, you must have the ability to think on your feet in a fast-paced radio broadcast environment and be proficient with Microsoft Word and Excel. Some broadcast traffic and accounting experience is helpful, but not required. To learn more about this temporary front desk position, call 433-5944 weekdays between 9 and 2 or visit our website at WLVL.com. Culver Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
Welcome back to Niagara County's Great History Show. In the studio with me this morning, Melissa Dunlap, the Executive Director of Niagara County History Center, and the curator, Terry Abrams. Okay, at the baseball display that you put on this last year was outstanding. So being part of the baseball lore of Lockport, I was really excited when I saw that. Now, is that going to come back next year? Do you have plans on bringing another baseball artifact show for next season?
We haven't planned anything officially, but you know, we are hoping that maybe, you know, we may, if not bring it back, you know, in person, you know, in the museum itself, maybe we may have sort of like a virtual exhibit on our website. But I know there are other artifacts out there. There are other you know, other stories to tell. There's certainly, you know, a very rich history, you know, and we can, and oftentimes, you know, when we put up an exhibit, we can only tell a small part of the story because there's just so much that, you know, so much out there. And that's one of the things, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, when you do research for an exhibit, you know, you have to do a lot. There's, you know, there's a lot there, and then you just sort of have to cut it down because you don't want to overwhelm people. I mean, for us who work in the museum field, we'd be more than happy to tell you about everything.
Yeah.
You know, and we could go on for hours, you know, about, you know, one little thing. But, you know, you don't want to overwhelm people, and, you know, sometimes they just, you know, so you have to sort of you know, temper it and put, you know, just put what you can in. And space is a consideration as well. You know, we're, there's a finite amount of space that we can put exhibits in. And so, you know, it's possible.
Okay, some of the artifacts that the people have at home, and they're not sure if it's an artifact worth calling you. They should call you and let you make that decision, correct? If they have something like I know when my mom passed, and I worked with a collector of artifacts from the past, and I had stuff like my mother had an original iron that you set on the stove to heat up before you put in do your clothes, you know. Mm-hmm. So something in that vein, they should give you a call, let you make that decision, correct?
Yes. You know, in some cases, you know, like, just for example, like old-fashioned manual typewriters, you know, we already have several of them in our collection.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, they're, and, you know, a lot of people have them. They're very, you know, for one thing, you know, they were well made, and so they lasted. And so, and a lot of people had them. So for something like that, we really don't need any more, you know, unfortunately, because, you know, we have plenty in the collection now. Other things, that we don't accept. For example, we don't take firearms. We don't take furs generally because we don't really have the capacity to preserve them properly. What else don't we
those accept? Are really two of the big ones, but storage space is also a premium. That's yeah. a big consideration.
Yes. Someone called me the other day. She wanted to donate a sofa bed that was from the Mont Eagle Hotel in Niagara Falls. And unfortunately, something that size, we don't have room to store it or display it even. Another example, that reminds me of another example. A gentleman called me, and he had his uncle's World War II memorabilia, medals, his discharge paper, a duffel bag, and he had gathered that all together, and he had it placed, he took it to Hobby Lobby, and had they created a display case for it, and the display case was 4 by 5 feet. So it was a pretty large case here. And, you know, he had called the American Legion in Lockport prior to us, and they didn't have space for it. And so they suggested he call us. And so I talked to him, and he was, again, 4 by 5 feet, that's a huge display case there. And unfortunately, we don't have exhibit space for that, and we don't really have storage space either for something of that size. And I was desperately trying to think of, you know, what can we do, because he was moving to Ohio to be closer to his children, and he didn't want to take it with him. And, you know, I hated the idea of this, because, you know, it's important material, you know, this World War II memorabilia that belonged to his uncle. And, you know, I hated the thought of, you know, it just being sort of left behind or something. And so I was talking to him, and I was trying to figure out, you know, how can I help him? What can I do to preserve this stuff or something? And as we were talking, you know, he mentioned that his uncle had been born in Sanborn. Now, Sanborn has a historical society, and they have a large museum complex. And in fact, they had just recently acquired a historic building that they had put on their site, which coincidentally enough, they were going to put military displays in. So I gave him their contact number. I told him, call them, find out, see if they'll take it. And says, if they don't take it, call me back and I'll see what we can do. Because I figured, you know, if worse comes to worst, we'll put it somewhere. We'll figure out something to do with it. So he called them, and they were more than happy to take this, because they knew the family. They knew who his uncle was, and they were just thrilled to be able to take in, you know, this World War II memorabilia. And he called me back about an hour later, and he was so happy that, you know, there was some place that was able to accept this, to bring it in, and take it. And so, you know, he was happy. I was happy. Sanborn was happy. It was a win-win-win for everybody. So, unfortunately, it doesn't always turn out that way, that, you know, sometimes people want to donate something to us that we just can't accept. But in this case, you know, we all came out, you know, happy.
Yeah. We have 7 buildings. They're at the main campus of 215 Niagara Street. But in those 7 buildings, only really 3 of them have storage. And the Pioneer Building has storage upstairs, but it's a textile storage. So that is anything that has material or shoes or fabric or
quilts,
coverlets, folk art. So that's one section that we have storage. Then we have the second story of the barn, but the barn is not heated. So that is good in some aspects and bad in others. If we have something that has mold, we put it in the barn over the winter and it kills it. but you know, that limits what you can store in there. So that's a storage space we have. And then over, years ago in 1999, we purchased the house adjacent to the to the Historical Society, which is 229 Niagara Street. And then that upstairs has the art storage and some artifact storage. But the rest of the things, people expect to see things on exhibit. So there really is a percentage that's always in storage, even if you rotate things constantly. But, you know, there isn't a lot of storage. The Bond House has a few closets for storage. That's it. You know, so that's, and that's at 143 Ontario Street. It's closed right now because we're having some work done. But, you know, there's very little storage there. And then at the Erie Canal Discovery Center, which is at 24 Church Street, that's our Erie Canal Museum. And we have one room, and that is from Charles Rampenny's collection, because he donated, before he passed away, he started dividing up all of his collection. And we got the Niagara County artifacts, and then we built the Penny Gallery at the mezzanine level in the Erie Canal Discovery Center so that we could display artifacts from Mr. Penny's collection. But he gave us 5,000 things. So they're in a room that's storage. So there really isn't a whole lot of storage. If we had money, we would run a storage facility, but then you collect even more stuff. So we don't have the staff to do that either. So there really is limited space to store things. And then the whole society started in 1921. So they've been collecting since then. The museum... and they didn't have a museum actually until 1955, which is the one on Niagara Street. But even if you think from 1955 to now, that's a lot of years to collect things. So it is, you know, the scale of it is really large. And poor Terry has an office that's crammed with artifacts waiting to go to the collections committee, where they're accepted or given back or whatever the donor has stipulated they want done. Although, because we do really watch the criteria when we're accepting things, we don't really get rid of a lot of things. And you know, when we make the decisions with the collections committee, so poor Terry is he's kind of sandwiched in there. He has a little path that he goes through to his desk.
So I guess I can modify my question because of your lack of space. It would have to be a outstanding artifact then for them to call you to be able to accept it and put on display.
Well, it doesn't have to be outstanding, because Terry just gave the example of that condo envelope. It's just something maybe that we haven't seen before, or a blueprint for something that we would be interested in. Or, I mean, it's really sad when people call you, they say, well, I had the blueprints to such and such, but I threw them out. And then you think, okay, well, why did you call?
So would you take something like a blueprint of a building, like maybe the big hotel down on Park Avenue, the Park Hotel,
yes,
if they had,
yes,
artifacts, or would you take and copy those and put that in the archives, or would you actually have a physical drawing of the building?
If they were willing to donate the originals, we would keep the originals. If they want to keep the originals but would let us have the information, we would have them scanned.
Because at one time, Lockport, as you know, was a booming
oh, yeah,
place, with, I think, three major hotels that even presidential candidates came to.
But we're coming back. I think Lockport, I mean, this year isn't a good example, but I think Lockport is really coming back. We're getting new businesses, and, you know, the skating rink came in, and the Palace was doing great things, and small businesses were doing well, and I hope we get back to that. But I think with the canal tours and the demonstrations of the Flight of Five and the renovation of the Flight of Five, and there's a lot of positive things going on that I think Lockport is again going to be a real site for tourists. And of course, this is the year we were supposed to start the trolley from Niagara Falls to Lockport. So the people who had already visited Niagara Falls and then on Monday wanted to do something different could have taken a trolley and gone all around Lockport and then gone back to Niagara Falls. And because a lot of people fly in to Niagara Falls, this is a great way to get them to our other cities and spaces. They could see, you know. So I'm hoping that after all this pandemic is over, that we'll go back to planning to have this trolley, because I think that that would be a wonderful addition to Niagara County.
Okay, let's back to the artifacts bit. What would you consider one of the most odd artifacts that you had an opportunity to investigate? Or not, maybe odd isn't the word, but unique. How's unique sound?
Okay, well, just again, within the past couple of years, and you know, I've been the curator for 2 years. So one of the interesting artifacts, you're familiar with the Sutherland sisters, right? The famous
yes.
Sutherland sisters, their long hair. Somebody who was a distant relative came in and donated some Sutherland sisters artifacts. And among those were braids of hair, actual hair from the Sutherland sisters. And so, you know, it's fascinating. One of the really interesting things about that, of course, is that, you know, all the pictures we have of them are black and white. So we don't really know what color their hair was. And so some of the, you know, we have braids from different, you know, different ones. So some of them, their hair is more reddish and some of it's, you know, is a little darker. And so, and they're varying lengths, but it's, you know, but that's, you know, some, one of my interns, you know, found it kind of creepy, the idea of human hair. You know, he was a little uncomfortable with it. So, but, you know, it's really the fact that here you have something, an artifact that, you know, the actual human hair from one of the Sutherland sisters, from somebody who lived, you know, in the 1800s. You know, that would classify as unique.
Yeah. Also, in our collection, we have hair wreaths because they were very popular, especially during the Civil War. Hair jewelry and hair wreaths, where people, some were mourning things. A lot of the jewelry is mourning, where somebody passed away, and they would cut a lock of their hair and then put it in a necklace or a pendant or a pin. And we have some that actually have the dates on the back of the jewelry. But the hair wreaths, sometimes they're a whole family, and so it's all different colors here, but they're made into flowers and designs. And so we do have a collection of those. And as I say, we have a collection of hair jewelry. So, you know, hair can be made into a lot of different things. and some of it's really interesting. It is. Could be a little creepy, but yeah, you know, it's an interesting thought.
Now we understand that COVID has put a damper on a lot of activities that people are doing right now. Is the History Center open, and can people call? Do they have to call to come to make an appointment to see all the displays that you have in the History Center? And are you open for the entire winter?
Okay. We are open, but very limited. We have the first floor open so that people can use the gift shop. They could go into the orientation room, which has the movie about all of the sites in Niagara County. They can see the exhibits. Terry is probably going to talk a little bit about the exhibit he's putting in right now. We did have an art show not too long ago of the Niagara Arts Guild, and so people came in. So we do not have the other four buildings open on the main site, and that's because we just don't have the staff to do the cleaning that would be required. So people really are coming in. We have a lot of researchers that are still coming in, and they come in by appointment, and so we could pull whatever files, and a lot of the things that they're looking for are in larger boxes that have to be gotten. Some things are in different buildings that have to be brought over, so that we know what they're looking for and we can assist them. But right now we are kind of limited as to what we do, but the gift shop is open, and of course we have a lot of books and a lot of local history items there, and if they want to talk to Anne-Marie or I, they certainly can. But as far as the other buildings, we just don't have them open. The Erie Canal Discovery Center is open Friday and Saturday from 10 to 3. So you can really tour that whole thing, watch the movie. They keep everybody socially distanced. You have to wear a mask. The same at the 215 Niagara site. We actually, the staff, wear masks all day. Anne-Marie and I are in the same office, so she and I have masks on all day. And then whenever we move about the museum, we have a mask on. So we really are pretty strict about it.
So let's move on and hope that the COVID is over by springtime. If it is, and let's just say we're back to normal activities. And for a person that's listening to the show for the first time today, what can they expect when they come down to the History Center and all of the buildings that will be open that time once this quarantine is lifted?
Okay, well, we're normally open at the 215 Niagara Street site from 9 to 5, Monday through Saturday. And there are five buildings, and so we have a really nice... Native exhibit. It has a Seneca village, and it has a lot of different artifacts. We have the transportation items in the barn. We have the different skilled shops like the carpenter and the cooper and that type of thing. We have a lot of vehicles in there. We have a fire exhibit in there. Then in the 229, we have business exhibits, a medical exhibit, and
the 1930s kitchen.
1930s kitchen, that's right. The Washington Hunt building has, Washington Hunt was from Niagara County, and he actually was governor of New York State, which is a surprise to people, from 1850 all year, and 1851, it was a two-year term. And in the back half of that building is the Albany Land Company, which he was an officer with Lot Clark. And what they did was they bought a huge chunk of land from the Holland Land Company, and then they sold the pieces. They made their money by selling smaller pieces of it. So that building used to be down on Marcus Street and was moved here. And then upstairs at 215, because I told you it was downstairs, is the toy exhibit and the Civil War exhibit and the Niagara County Genealogical Society. They rent space from us, and then they have their library in that space, and they are open Thursday through Saturday, 1 to 5. But right now they're just taking people by appointment also. The Erie Canal Discovery Center opens May 1st and ends on October 31st. It is open every day, 9 to 5. And the Bond House is open normally in the summer with volunteers, and we set the days and we'll advertise them.
Well, as usual, we're running short on time, and you mentioned that Terry has another venture that you would like to have him tell us about.
Oh, sure. We received some grant funding from Humanities New York, and to do, as we mentioned earlier, programming and also an exhibit. And the title of the exhibit is The Lockwood Legacy, Belva Lockwood and the Fight for Equal Rights in America. And Belva Lockwood, as many people know, she was born in the town of Royalton here in Niagara County in 1830. She grew up and she went on to run for president. She was, the first woman to run for president of the United States in 1884, when women didn't even have the right to vote. She was the candidate for the Equal Rights Party, and part of her platform was equal pay for equal work, which is an issue which is still relevant today. People are still fighting that fight. She came to that when she became a school teacher, and she discovered that male teachers were paid twice what women teachers were paid. We talk about her growing up, her life in Niagara County, her career as a school teacher, her fight to become a lawyer. She was the first woman to argue before the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. Her work as a suffragist. But we also talk about sort of her legacy, you know, what the people that followed after her and, you know, what influence she has had here in Niagara County and throughout the country. So,
So Terry's doing an exhibit on Belva Lockwood. So,
yes.
Yeah, he's going to get that completed, and then that would definitely be worth coming in to see.
So more artifacts.
Yep.
You know, I think one of my favorite artifacts is there's a bobblehead doll of Belva Lockwood, which, you know, and there's a whole story involved in that. And so if you come to the exhibit, you can learn about that.
So I don't know. We really are the guardians of what is in the museum for the time that we're here and for the next generation, because we want people to be able to use the items for research and books and papers and just to learn from. So I think that's kind of an important aspect.
We were talking about businesses earlier, about local business. One of the things that I'd like to see if people are interested in donating things is like T-shirts that have, you know, the business logo on it or their name, you know, some that, you know, get put out for advertising.
Photographs, especially if they have older photographs or inside the business.
Yes, old photographs or any kind of matchbooks. We received matchbooks with people's advertising. Like one of the another artifact that it came in not too long ago, one of our longtime volunteers had brought in a T-shirt. That had Chet's Doghouse from there on Main Street in Lockport, which, you know, sadly is no longer there. But, you know, that's a perfect example of, you know, something that I would love to have in, you know, in our collection.
I don't think there is a person in my age group that hadn't gone to Chet's Doghouse.
Yep.
Or the Castle's Dairy on Main Street on a Friday night after a dance or whatever. They were staples in Lockport.
Yep.
Staples.
Absolutely. And we do have some things like Castle's milk bottles and a Castle's chocolate box. But there's still a lot of artifacts, you know, that probably somebody has and doesn't even realize.
2.5 minutes, Melissa. Let's recap what you have planned.
Okay. Anne-Marie is having a book signing. She wrote a book about the 20 Protestant churches in the city of Lockport. So now we'll have to get her to do the town. And it's got a history of the churches and photographs. She'll be having this book signing at 215 Niagara Street on Wednesday, December 16th at 2 p.m. You have to wear a mask, and there will be social distancing. If you want more information, you can call the museum at 434-7433. And this book was sponsored by the Wright's Corners Presbyterian Church. They donated the money for the publication of Anne-Marie writing the book and the printing of it before the church disbanded. So that was what they wanted to be their legacy, was that there would be a book telling about the churches.
And if I'm not mistaken, one time per capita, Lockport had more churches and more bars than any other city in the United States.
Well, I know bars for sure, because there was one year when I counted in the directory, there were 76 just in Lockport. So I have the feeling that's probably true. There were a lot of churches. Well, now you say 20 churches in the city of Lockport. I don't know how that compares to other cities. We'd have to find out.
It has been a blast once again to go back into the past, and you can do that by visiting Niagara County's Great History Show. Norm Palmer saying good morning for Melissa Dunlap, Terry Abrams from the Niagara County History Center. You've been listening to Niagara County's Great History Show on 1340 AM, 105.3 FM.
President Trump carried Texas. Will Texas now carry him? I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. It's challenging election results in four states Joe Biden won: Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin.
A state-on-state action has to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. It's the only place we can go.
Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, a Republican.
Paxton argues that those states destroyed trust and compromised the security.